Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Yeah, it was 45 years ago today that the five most recognizable notes in, depending on who you listen to, either pop music or all music, was first performed by the Rolling Stones. Ah, 45 years ago today. Ah! We're not web streaming, we're not video streaming tonight, because I still have this damn bronchitis, and last night I was just burping all over the place, and I just can't do it. So we will probably be back with video streaming tomorrow night. What the hell happened today on Wall Street? Well, the quick answer is what happened today was what happens with when the predatory capitalist pigs lose control and things go nuts. 1,000-point drop in 5 minutes? Now, what does that tell you? Does that tell you that all the little moms and pops that own stock in their 401ks all decided, hey, let's go trade some stock today and see if we can sell and buy. Okay, mom. Okay, pop. Yeah, you know, buy low, sell high. Here we go. Let's go down to our friendly Merrill Lynch, broker office. Is Merrill Lynch still around, or are they one of the companies that went belly up? Who knows? But anyway, what happened is I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. So let's turn to Prairie 2, who wrote in, a steel dome is to be lowered over Wall Street to contain the red ink. Ooh. A drilling platform at the corner of Wall Street and Broadway exploded and sank today with sticky red ink spreading across the land. It is impossible to estimate the damage this will do as it begins to wash up on Main Street. Senator John Kyle of Arizona denied that any Republican in the Senate ever favored more financial drilling. Quote, some candidates may have said something 2 or 3 years ago like, the fundamentals of the economy are sound, but that was never our policy. The real story is nearly as bizarre. It's been reported that human traders on the floor just stood and watched as the market fell over 1,000 points in less than 5 minutes. There is a circuit breaker that is currently set at the 1,050-point decline to suspend computer trading for an hour. But there is no admission so far of that happening. Incredibly, they're circulating the rumor that this panic was triggered by a futures trader on the Chicago Board of Trade incorrectly selling $16 billion of an exotic instrument instead of $16 million. This seems a bit far-fetched. Are they really describing a blowout? Didn't Halliburton cement the trade properly? It's more likely that the U.S. dollar reaching new highs thanks to Standard & Poor's hyping the Greek bond crisis that has triggered margin calls. You see, the U.S. dollar now needs to be repaid at a higher rate than when they were invested in a different currency. We do know that Procter & Gamble and 3M stock fell by half in just 5 minutes before coming back, with trillions in Fed money on loan to the Wall Street banks at zero interest, pumping up world markets through the carry trade. It was only a question of time before panic occurred. Asian markets have experienced steep declines on a daily basis, and Europe has been as well, with fears over the collapse of the euro. The fact that the market, quote, rebounded up, end quote, to only 350 points down means little. Wall Street banks could easily drive the market back up before the close as trading would be light unless a full-fledged panic took hold and traders were willing to sell at any price. It is even possible for the Fed and Treasury to pump cash into the market directly in order to intervene and prevent a crash using authority developed after the Reagan market crash. It's been rumored that there was a lot of this done under Bush to try to hold off another crash until after he left office. You see, there really is no free market under capitalism. The capitalists would never stand for it. crashes are okay for the rest of us, though. Prairie 2. You go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Yeah, I heard that late today. I was helping Kathy put some, bring some plants up to the back porch, the open back porch, to put in the window boxes. And I missed the whole exciting thing. I went back down to the kitchen to get a glass of water, and all of a sudden, you know, I see this stuff exploding about the market, down 1,000 points. All of a sudden, it's down 900, then 8, then 7, then 6, then 5. I thought, what in the hell happened? So as Prairie 2 points out, the story being generated now is, it was somebody at, the Chicago Board of Trade. No, it was somebody at one of the investment houses that hit the wrong key. No, it was this. No, it was that. When in fact, there's a very good possibility, as Prairie 2 points out, that there was some panic today. Absolute panic. Now, this is what happens. This is how quick, if it does crash, this is how quick it's going to crash. Bada bing, bada boom. It's real scary stuff. It is to me anyway. Now, it's been suggested, where did I watch today? On CNBC, after I realized what the hell was going on. One of the business channels, somebody suggested, and maybe it was just CNN, but somebody suggested pay very close attention to the markets tomorrow. Now, I don't have stocks. I don't have any, do I, Kathy? That's right, I used to. I had 401k. No, what did I have? And it started to go crazy.
Well, technically, we still have XM. Technically, although I think now they charge us to keep it.
We bought XM at, what, 13? No, what was it? $11 a share, and it went up to 35, and we thought, wow! And then it went down to 30 cents. No, I never have indulged in the stock market. It's just not for me. I've had 401ks where I'm sure they were managed in the stock market, but I don't own stock. Kathy owns some stock or whatever the hell they are, some kind of financial instruments in what is called emerging markets. And she's been doing fine. She doesn't pay any attention to it. She just gets a statement every 6 months. But it's been growing by leaps and bounds. Me, I stay completely the hell out of it. I hate capitalism. I think it's a murderous, filthy, degenerate enterprise. It eats people. It destroys people. It destroys countries. And today, look what happened. Look what's happening in Greece. Now, the thing about Greece, and I'm sure Prairie 2 is already writing something about this, the UK, England, is perched on a limb, and that noise you hear is the European market sawing that limb off. England! Mother England is about to collapse! The British, the UK, is about to go down like Greece. Oh, my God. Now, maybe Prairie 2 can send something in here, or Steve the banker, or some of our financial wonderkins who listen to this program, to tell me what the hell is going on in the UK. We'll be right back.
not ready to make nice. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Today was National Day of Prayer. I haven't seen anything on the news about it. It was today, wasn't it? Yeah, it was today. And I got an email from Kay, our education affairs correspondent. And she saw something at my website, something that Kathy had written today, kind of the daily blog, what we're going to talk about or what have you. Anyway, Kathy kind of pulled out her slash and burn equipment regarding National Day of Prayer. And Kay saw it and wrote, "Mike, after reading the blog today, I had to share an internet conversation I had the misfortune of participating in yesterday. Why do I get the feeling that most of these folks are very similar to those who attend events like the National Day of Prayer breakfast? I mean, just look at the super important things they are praying for. In this case, in the case of this internet conversation, a house on a California bluff overlooking the ocean." Original post. "Okay, the sale, the one that someone with cash came in and cut us out of. It fell through. So we are back in contention. This house is above Canyon Drive with the ocean view. Say a little prayer for us." Response number one. "Sending prayers for you. It just means God has a better house in store for you and your family." Response number two. "Praying, praying, praying." Response number three. "Big prayers flowing your way. We are still working on the wine country house, but hope to wrap it up this week." Response number four. "Prayers for you. All good things come to those who wait." Kay writes, "If God really is the hairy thunderer that most Christians claim he is, these folks better run for the hills and fast. What was all that stuff in the book of Exodus about not coveting your neighbor's house? Or what about Jesus' admonition that the only way into the kingdom of heaven was for the rich man to sell all your possessions and follow me?" Regarding the fourth response, "Prayers for you, all good things come to those who wait." I want to ask this person, really? All good things come to those who wait? What about the people in sub-Saharan Africa who are waiting for water, food, medicine that will never arrive? Are you effing kidding me? Mike, this uniquely American brand of, quote, Christianity, end quote, just makes my head explode. When I think of all the people in this country and around the world who have no food, no clothing, no shelter, when I think about the devastation being wrought in the Gulf of Mexico because of greedy bastards like many of those attending today's prayer breakfast, and when I consider that these people are so arrogant as to actually think that their God gives a blank about their petty petitions, well, I could vomit. Blood. And that brings me to the whole concept of their God. This God evidently honors materialistic requests from American Christians for bigger, better, faster, more, while turning his back on millions of people who are abused and exploited every single day. And I am supposed to worship this deity? As Mr. Cates, the schoolteacher brought to trial for teaching evolution in the play Inherit the Wind, remarked, and I'm paraphrasing here, "Man created God out of his own superstitions and bigotry." To that, I would add, and out of his own arrogance, selfishness, and greed. The only thing this National Day of Prayer shows me is that we are a sick nation in every respect, body, mind, and spirit. Okay. Andy in Seattle. "Mike, praise the Lord, it's National Prayer Day. I, for one, prefer the hardcore Christianity that comes right out of the King James Version of the Bible. The only real Bible, as any fundamentalist would tell you. And need I remind everyone, there's not a single place in the written word of God that allows you to pick and choose what to believe, shout glory. We could go on for hours about the joyous things in the Bible that we should not believe, but celebrate. not only believe, but celebrate. We could talk about the murdering of children, the rapes, and everything else done in His glory, but I digress. And remember, you liberal Christians, real Christianity is an all-or-nothing sort of gig. Again, where is that passage in the Bible that allows us to pick and choose? Anyone? Praise Jesus! Hand me that snake and rat poison, the fundamentalists. Maybe crazy, but it's just what God tells them to be via the King James Version of the Holy Bible. We may think of them as hate-filled, but anyone who's read the Bible cover to cover can tell you about God is that He has infinite wrath, that He's just aching, that's just aching to be poured out on everyone, innocent or guilty without much notice. Hallelujah, brothers and sisters! Goodbye. Only in nations like the United States and Iran is religion taken so seriously, and why not? Clinging to beliefs dating back to the Bronze Age and before certainly ensures that our country and world can progress into the future. Right? Andy in Seattle.
To the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour, so Prairie 2 heard my plea, I guess. Or else it's just another act of God here on Prayer Day. Prairie 2 writes in, Japan's market is now open. It dropped another 3.75%, but is steady right now. The UK is next on the hit list for the bond shorters. Wall Street banks and hedge funds have so much money, thanks to the Fed, that they are just eating one country after another. It's great for the U.S. dollar if you're a currency trader. Not so good for the stock market. But you can short sell that too. That quadrillion in derivatives are coming home to roost. You know what you find under a roost? That's where the rest of us are, and don't look up. Well, I'm still just as confused as I can be. So anyway, thanks, Bruce. So on National Prayer Day, this is a part I don't get. On National Prayer Day, if there's one thing that's wedded into this holy lock of vampiric matrimony, it's Christianity and capitalism. I mean, those two concepts, they're both predatory, they're both degenerate, they're both anti-life and anti-human, and they are locked together. You cannot separate capitalism and Christianity. You simply can't do it. So, if that's the case, and it is, while all these leaders, so to speak, and whoever attends these national prayer breakfast thingies, and by the way, the first one, of course, was put together by Billy Graham back during the bad old days when godless communism was eating at the hem of the United States. If all these people were together in Washington, D.C., praying until... I'm sure they all hoped, like Jesus in Gethsemane, little beads of blood would break out on their foreheads, although I doubt if that happened. I just don't take these guys all that seriously. Their kind of Christianity is the public kind, the kind that Jesus condemned the Pharisees, the kind of religion that Jesus condemned the Pharisees for. But anyway, I digress. So, National Day of Prayer. On this day, a day set aside by... predatory capitalism to honor the deity. How does he respond? He rips a hole in their stock market so big you could drive a chariot through. I don't know. I just find it funny. God got pissed today. Their God got pissed. He said, wait, what are you all doing down there? Oh, a little mama, mama. They're talking in tongues and passing the bag of snakes around and everything. Well, not Obama and the real Christians, but... And God sees that, one can imagine, and God says, oh, you're doing that again? Here, try this. Bow! Predatory capitalism and predatory Christianity. You tell me the difference between the two. Speaking of Franklin Graham, he is now warning. Can't this be considered an act of terror? Somebody ought to lock this guy up and give him a bag of cocaine and just let him blow his own brains out. It's common knowledge that Franklin Graham was a cokehead of the worst kind. Kind of like George W. Bush. Look what happened to George W. Bush. Bush became this delusional, dry, drunk, God talked to him, told him to invade countries. Jesus. So Franklin Graham, apparently God told him to bust up on Muslims and continue to agitate and irritate a billion people on the planet. But now Franklin Graham is warning the President of the United States, you're going to lose millions of evangelical votes. Yes, you are. He said, because he was denied entry into the Pentagon, you see, which Obama has nothing to do with. But Graham is a coke freak. He is an ex-junkie, and that means his head is still firmly planted wherever it needs to be in order for him to find a line or two. But he says, there won't be the evangelicals, my brothers and sisters, will not be at the table next time, Mr. President. We will not be there because you denied me entry into the Pentagon where I could link hands with the people who commit atrocious acts of terror all over the planet and offer them the blessings of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And you denied me that, Mr. President. Well, for that reason, Mr. President, I am going to deny you evangelical votes by the hundreds of thousands. Amen, amen, and amen. So today, Franklin Graham took his anger to the sidewalk in front of the Pentagon, praying in protest with a half dozen others while the official event took place inside. Hallelujah. He told reporters that he prayed for the men and women of the armed forces. Amen. And that he doesn't feel his statements about other religions have been offensive at all. You know, God damn Islam. God damn the thousand armed elephant of Hinduism. Hell yes! But that's not offensive. It's not offensive because, amen, there is only one true God and only one redemptive path through his Son, Jesus Christ. Graham said during his prayer vigil today on the sidewalk, it must be difficult for Franklin Graham to have to pray on the sidewalk. Although I believe that's what Jesus instructed his disciples to do. Go ye therefore into all the world, teaching. Not the kind of garbage that Franklin Graham spews all over the concrete. But he said as he's standing on the sidewalk, I just pray that this year and that in 2 years from now, the churches all across America will sign up women and men to vote. No, not to tell them how to vote, got to protect that tax exemption, but to sign them up, register them to vote, because I believe the Church of Jesus Christ can make a huge difference in these two elections. But you got to get out and vote. And if we don't do it, we're going to be in trouble. So that would be my word of encouragement. Get out there, pastors. Get the men and women of your church to register and go vote. Of course, it seems pretty clear how Franklin would like those voters to vote. Oh my God. Oh, The marriage of capitalism and Christianity. Oh, my goodness. This is what the drug-addled John of Patmos was talking about when he wrote the book of Revelation. The marriage of the beast and the whore. Incredible stuff, man. Franklin Graham more or less calling down the wrath of the Christian God on Barack Obama. Meanwhile, you know, Franklin Graham, did he miss the fact that the stock market had 1,000 points ripped out of its very guts? I mean, who? Nobody knows who did it? Nobody's sure what happened? Well, Franklin, pay attention. We mentioned the other night that the Hutteries, those are these goofy-looking jacklegs from Michigan and Ohio, I guess. The Hutteries, those are those people that were busted because they decided they were going to kill a bunch of police officers. And then when other police officers came to seek revenge, the Hutteries were going to kill even more. Meantime, a squad of Boy Scouts armed with some minimal weaponry would probably make these Hutteries run screaming back into the caves from whence they emerged. But the Hutteries were arrested. They were taken before them. They were put in jail. They were held under enormous bond until a judge released them. And as Merle from Michigan writes, I guess they're not really terrorists because... wait for it. They're white. They're white. I love all people, Merle writes, and was raised this way, but this sounds ridiculous. Terrorists are always going to be terrorists. The judge apparently watches Glenn Beck or listens to Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, we mentioned that the other night. These guys, you know, here's some doofus that took some firecrackers and you know, potential to have really, really caused some damage in Midtown Manhattan. And he, of course, is under lock and key. This guy, this 30-year-old Muslim, will never see the light of day, ever again. His life, for the rest of his life, will be behind concrete and steel with armed guards pointing automatic weapons at him 24/7. But these 10 freaks from Michigan who decided they wanted to overthrow the government, they wanted to kill cops. Ah, well, you know, just a bunch of boys feeling their oats a little bit, you know. Bailiff, let them go. If I could
Seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Took a whole lot of trying just to get up that hill. Now we're up in the big leagues. Getting out, turn at best.
10 before the hour. Was it last night, Kathy? We had the call from the guy in Miami that drives a limo. Milton, was that last night? He wanted to get on me about capitalism and... he was patting himself on the back because he had 9 cars and, you know, yada, yada, yada. I got an email from Lane. Writes, Mike, note to Milton, the limo capitalist. I hope that was the name I heard. Was it Milton? I don't remember. Let's call him Milton. Anyway, Lane writes, let's do a little thought exercise, Mr. Limo capitalist. Would he still love capitalism if a monopolistic company came in and franchised overwhelming competition? They would have deep pockets and be able to underbid him just long enough to put him out of business. They'd outsource billing and administration of the company to India. They'd buy blitz advertising time on media, which they may also be a shareholder in, that Milt can't afford to buy. They'd buy fleets of cars that can be in more places simultaneously than he can. They'd sell cheap contracts to large corporations, which he, with his puny stable of nine, would not be able to service. Or let's see what happens if oil becomes so expensive his little company is no longer profitable. A large nationalized company can absorb any loss that he cannot. You see, Milton has old-fashioned mom-and-pop free market enterprise and entrepreneurship all mixed up with monopolistic capitalism, which is what we have had since Reagan destroyed antitrust legislation. Only, if one of these big companies never comes in and takes over his territory, will he be able to continue to be a small business owner? If a big company were to swoop in, then he too would be swallowed by a behemoth which does not allow true competition, no way, no how. Real capitalism wants everything, wants him out of business. And they can do it. Not because they have a better mousetrap, far from it, but because they can outfinance him or outcapitalize him through their megalithic power and ownership of many companies. Just because there isn't yet a Walmart in limousine service in his town doesn't mean capitalism isn't eating up his children's future in the race towards a second or a two-class feudalism. Milton, real capitalism hates mom and pop. And guess what? You're a pop. Lane. Well, thanks, Lane. I just never have the patience that is necessary to address an issue like Lane just did or Tom Hartman would. You know, when I hear these people, it's just like I get too pissed off immediately because, you know, I hate this attitude of I've done it all on my own. No, you haven't. Nobody in this country does it on their own, not for the past 200 years anyway. No, you don't. You know, this idea that, oh, well, I'm a self-made man or woman. No, you're not. Not ever. Not for 5 seconds of your greedy, miserable, acquisitive life were you ever doing it all on your own. Ever. But, you know, how do you undo years and miles of propaganda that keeps telling, people who are exploited all day long by this capitalistic, religious society. They're manipulated and victimized all day long. You too can sit at the right hand of God. You too can own a huge mansion overlooking the coast of California. You too can be happy and successful and never have to deal with cancer or Lou Gehrig's disease or a stroke or a heart attack. Here's all you have to do. Wow, it's amazing. So, to the guy in Miami who has the nine-vehicle limousine service, good for you. That means you're working your ass off, and you have a mom-and-pop business, and you're an entrepreneur, and good for you. Just let me offer a little advice, pal. Quit being so goddamn self-righteous, okay? Quit walking around patting yourself on the back. Well, I came from a family of liberals, but I managed to escape and open up a limousine. But good for you. Good for you. But just ease up a little bit, will you, pal, on how good you have it? Because it's a little smarmy listening to it. You know what I'm saying? And I doubt you'd ever call this program again if something happens. Oh, I don't know what could happen. Your insurance rates would skyrocket. Or there would be some sort of medical expense in your family that puts you on the verge of bankruptcy. Or, oh, I don't know, something happens and all of a sudden all your nine limos are in jeopardy. Would you call this this program then and say, I guess I was wrong about capitalism. It just ate me alive. Anyway, I hope that never happens to you, Milton. I hope you have a great, great time running your business. I hope you make bukus of money and, you know, all your children are apple-cheeked and happy and very, very bright, and that you and your spouse just live forever.
Flying Monkey Free Fun and Frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. This is from Alex in Oregon. Mike, a couple of thoughts on this oil tragedy in the Gulf. First, my new bumper sticker. The oceans, not too big to fail. Second, to help listeners understand the depth of the problem, no pun intended, it may be helpful to paint a picture. Here it is. The oil volcano is spewing oceans of oil into the ocean itself. This is as toxic to all life there, as much as a planetary firestorm would be toxic to human beings. Wish we could use this travesty and tragedy as a springboard for humans to actually learn something, to finally wean ourselves from fossil fuels, to make a massive switch to green energy now, and to also take the opportunity to remove money from politics, something that's every bit as devastating and toxic to we the people. Take care, Alex in Oregon. Here's the horror to me, and when we come back, we're going to have Uncle Mike's Story Corner that I would like you to, I'd like to share with you, because it's about the food chain in the Gulf of Mexico. But I think the reality of the situation in the Gulf of Mexico, it's too horrifying to contemplate. Late today, as my understanding, or at some point today, BP managed to get one of the three, now there's three leaks, capped, and it did nothing as far as reducing the flow of this poison into the ocean. On the way to this former drilling platform is a cap a dome, whatever they want to call it. They're going to attempt the impossible. First of all, sink it a mile under sea and then make it tight enough that it's going to stop the oil from spewing out into the Gulf. And then the oil is supposed to go up a pipe, and they're going to harvest the oil in a tanker above the wellhead. I don't think that no matter how this turns out, and it can only turn out badly, it's just a matter of how badly, I don't think it's going to have the slightest effect on our addiction to oil and fossil fuel. I don't think it's going to wake anybody up. We Americans, specifically and generally, we humans, have this incredible propensity for denial and avoidance. We pretend, we invent religion so that we can pretend we're not really going to die. We're going to pretend that we're the one organism on earth that can have eternal life if we just follow a certain religion. We also pretend that something like this that's going on in the Gulf of Mexico can be fixed. And then when it's not fixed, or even if it is fixed, we pretend that nothing happened. We deny that we are tampering with the very essence of life on this planet. You know, there's no life in some great by and by in the sky. It's all here. It's all now. And this is it as far as human beings and the other interwoven life forms on this planet are concerned. This is it. You know, this idea of, oh, well, we're all going to rapture, so it doesn't matter. Or some of us are going to rapture, not that goddamn Malloy, but some of us are. No, you're crazy. You're just bat guano crazy. And anybody that believes that nonsense, that gives you license to do anything you want to pollute and corrupt and destroy and poison this planet because you think you're going to get off of it. Well, I got news for you, Bubala. No, you're not. But anyway, I try to force myself not to think about this during the day because denial is something that I've got to have. I've got to have avoidance and denial in order to stay alive, in order to keep my mind from just breaking into a million pieces, especially where it concerns what has happened to our country, our social system, our political system, our environment. If I stop and think about this stuff, just like you, I mean, when I say I know you feel the same way. If I stop and think about it too long, I'll just go absolutely gibbering, drooling crazy, like Franklin Graham. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour, and it's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. It's a nice spring night here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I hope it's pleasant where you are. Cuddle up with your blankie and your teddy, whatever you cuddle up with while Uncle Mike once again brings you to Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight's story is entitled Concerns Up and Down the Food Chain, and it's written by Leslie Kaufman. As the oil spill from the deepwater horizon spreads across the Gulf of Mexico, environmentalists and government officials have been working frantically to protect shoreline habitat, like this island, Breton Island, in the Breton National Wildlife Refuge, 8 miles off the coast of Louisiana. Breton Island, with its hundreds of nesting birds, has been protected by orange booms, as have many other areas of delicate estuaries and wetlands. But biologists are increasingly alarmed for wildlife offshore, where the damage from a spill can be invisible but still deadly. And they caution that because of the fluidity between onshore and offshore marine communities, the harm taking place deep at sea will come back to haunt the shallows, whether or not they are directly hit by the slick. The Gulf's deeper water harbors 10 species of threatened sharks, 6 species of endangered turtles, manatees, whales, and innumerable fish. It is also a temporary home for the eggs of dozens of species of fish and shellfish, whose offspring spend their earliest days floating along currents at the surface of the water, the very layer where most of the oil settles. There, the effects can be devastating. Studies from previous spills show, like whales so drugged and disoriented by noxious petroleum fumes that they can drown, and tiny translucent organisms whose bodies are literally burned from the inside out as the sun heats the fuel they have ingested. Christopher Mann, with the marine program of the nonprofit Pew Environmental Group, said, quote, "Unfortunately, we've had a lot of experience in how oil affects marine life, ecosystems, coastal communities, and fisheries. The iconic images of soiled seabirds are just the tip of the iceberg, because oil spills affect life up and down the food chain." End quote. Take the blue crab, which along with shrimp is among the largest fishing crop out of Louisiana. When molting, the crabs are known as soft shells and are immensely popular in restaurants up and down the East Coast. They also serve as food for other sea creatures like redfish and certain species of turtles. Although thought of as a coastal animal, the crabs breed at sea. As the water warms, females leave the protection of the coast for perhaps the only time in their lives and go out to shoals in the Gulf to disperse fertilized eggs. The eggs hatch, and billions of tiny crabs, invisible to the naked eye, drift for 40 days along the currents in the deep sea before ending up back in the marshes. Many of the shoals favored by the crabs are already covered in oil, said Kaz Taylor, professor of ecology and evolution at Tulane University, who is studying their migration patterns. "It can't be good," she said. Spring is mating and spawning season for almost everything in the Gulf. Fill a jar with plankton from the local waters in the spring, and it will typically contain the larva of 80 species. All the eggs and hatchlings are surface dwellers with almost no ability to swim away from the slick. Jeffrey Short, Pacific Research Director for Oceana, a nonprofit organization that works for marine preservation, said, quote, "Eggs and larvae that dwell near the sea surface are especially vulnerable." The components of crude oil, he added, can produce developmental deformities at low concentrations, and any such deformities are ultimately lethal to organisms in the wild. So far, there have been few documented animal casualties of the Deepwater Horizon spill, though rumors of dead manatees and whales abound. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration said that its planes had spotted numerous species of dolphins and turtles in areas now covered by the oil slick. Since Sunday, 30 turtles have washed up dead on beaches in Gulfport, Mississippi, an unusually high number even for this time of year when they are migrating. But Moby Solange, executive director of the Institute for Marine Mammal Studies in Gulfport, said that in a preliminary examination, the oil did not appear to be the cause of death. Full necropsies of the animals are being completed. Still, Michelle Kelly, Turtle and Marine Mammal Standing Coordinator for Louisiana, said she's worried. Ms. Kelly said, quote, sea turtles are more prone to ingest this stuff, end quote. Whales and dolphins that must come up through the oil to get air are likely to suffer skin and eye irritation. In some cases, they may breathe in the toxic fumes of evaporation. In areas where oil is viscous, the marine mammals can risk having their skin and eyes irritated. More rarely, they risk breathing toxic fumes from the evaporating oil and become drugged and sleepy. The fumes are particularly dangerous when the crude oil is fresh because some strong toxins evaporate early. With a one-time spill, the slick gets less dangerous over time, but in the Gulf, where the well has not been capped, there's a constant supply of new vapors. Dr. Solange said he was worried for dolphins. He said they have to be awake to breathe. If they become anesthetized, they will die. If they become intoxicated by fumes, they won't survive. Even normal feeding might expose sea creatures to harm from the spill. Seagrass and other vegetation covered in oil are ingested by fish that are then eaten by bigger fish and finally by manatees and other marine species. It is this food chain effect that worries the National Wildlife Federation. Larry Schweiger of that organization said, quote, "It is not a question of whether all these species will be affected now. The question is when." Another Uncle Mike Story Corner, this one a horror story, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Our writer tonight was Leslie Kaufman, and this appeared in the New York Times yesterday. It is 42 past the hour. Bob in Pasadena, California writes, I read the White House timeline of the response to the oil leak situation on their website. I noticed that they say they have dispatched nearly 200 ships and more than 7,500 Navy and Coastal Guard personnel to the Gulf to deal with the situation. However, nowhere did they say they have sent a single deep-diving manned submarine of the kind operated by the Office of Naval Research. It seems very strange to me. No effort has been made to use these subs, which have powerful hydraulic arms and are able to operate safely at depths up to 13,000 feet for many hours, instead of relying on tiny robot subs that don't have the ability to shut the valves on the blowout preventers at the seafloor. In 2000, the Office of Naval Research submarine Alvin did a survey of the seafloor in the Gulf of Mexico in exactly the same area where the BP well is located. So the area is very familiar to Navy submarine crews. The Alvin is the same sub that discovered the Titanic at a depth of 12,500 feet with no problems and successfully retrieved a hydrogen bomb off the seafloor near Spain. With such a capable deep-diving vehicle available, why has the White House allowed BP to screw around for 2 weeks with tiny robots that have only limited ability to function when they could have sent the Alvin or a similar sub within the first 3 days of the oil leak being discovered? Bob in Pasadena. Wish I had an answer, pal. I surely do. Now, I have a synopsis sent to me by Tony in Maine of all the stuff that has... He went to all sorts. He did a lot of research. He tried to avoid mainstream or corporate media sources because they're not telling the truth about the magnitude of this growing story. So when we come back, I'm going to share some of the stuff that Tony has found in doing his research. And then for the final hour of the program tonight, we're going to open up the phone lines and take your calls. So stick around. We still have lots of fun and frivolity coming. I'm Mike Malloy. Number here is 877-996-2556. We're going to open up the lines after the break. Anyway, this is what Tony in Maine came up with. He did a bunch of research. He tried to stay away from corporate media sources. First, a BP official told members of Congress in a closed-door meeting that the oil leak in the Gulf could be spewing as much as 60,000 barrels of oil a day. That's 2.5 million gallons. Well over the earlier BS they told us of 5,000 barrels a day. Before that, it was 1,000 barrels a day. That's according to reports Wednesday on MarketWatch.com. Number two, from the Huffington Post, a Guardian analysis, that's the Guardian of the UK, found that BP's green campaign, remember that? Beyond Petroleum. Remember when that sweet? Overemphasizes their investments in alternative forms of energy, when those investments are just a blip on their history of huge investments in and profits from fossil fuel energy. In the first quarter of 2010, BP took in $73 billion in revenue. $72.3 billion of that came from the exploration, production, refining, and marketing of oil and natural gas. The rest came from solar and wind energy. Number three, a ProPublica report last week chronicles BP's involvement in some of the biggest oil and gas disasters of the past 5 years due to their negligence. In 2005, an explosion at BP's Texas oil refinery left 15 workers dead and injured 170 others. The cause? BP had ignored its own safety regulations and left a warning system disabled. In 2006, 267,000 gallons of crude oil spread into Alaska's Prudhoe Bay due to a tiny hole in the company's pipeline. The company had been told to check the pipeline in 2002, but ignored the warning. The spill was not even discovered until 5 days after it occurred and was the largest in the region's history. There's more here. Now, remember what we've talked about on this program. Capitalism doesn't give a damn how many people die. They couldn't care less. As a matter of fact, the one major expendable cog in the wheel of capitalism is human labor. That's the part that has the least effect on decisions that are made to increase the capitalist entity's profit. Human labor is the part that they just flick aside. So when, you know, when people die as a result of these corporations' incompetence, it means nothing. It means more to them, if they lose, for example, an oil platform. That's serious business. The 15 people that died, in the explosion means nothing. Number four, U.S. law may limit how much BP has to pay for damages, such as lost wages and economic suffering in the Gulf Coast oil spill, despite President Obama's assurances that taxpayers will not be on the hook. A law passed in response to the 1989 Exxon Valdez spill in Alaska makes BP responsible for cleanup costs, but the law sets a $75 million limit on other kinds of damages. Economic losses to the Gulf Coast are likely to exceed that. In response, several Democratic senators introduced legislation Monday to raise the liability limit to $10 billion, though it would not apply retroactively. The source for that is Cleveland.com. Yeah, after Exxon destroyed the coast and destroyed everything in the Exxon Valdez, what's the first thing that happens? Let's get some laws passed quickly. Got to limit the liability. The people in Alaska, the shrimpers and the fishermen who were put out of business up there, who waited and waited and waited for some kind of a lawsuit. They're still waiting to be settled. They're still waiting 21 years later. These corporate sons of bitches do not care. Capitalism, remember, is about capital. It has nothing to do with the social fabric of a society. It has nothing to do with caring about the workers, about the families involved, about the safety of those workers. It cares nothing. Because it is not a living, breathing entity, regardless of what the Supreme Court recently ruled. Capitalism is about profit. Profit above all else. Profit or else. Profit, profit, profit. Human life is a useless, expendable, a little bit of glop that occasionally gets in their way. We had a situation down here near the coast, in Savannah, where a sugar refinery plant that had been warned time and time again that the sugar dust was posing a horrendous risk for an explosion. Nobody paid any attention. The explosion occurred. I forget what the final death toll was. I think it was close to 20 people that were burned alive, just burned alive. The sugar company still operates. It doesn't mean a thing. Capitalism looks at human labor as the least of its worries. You know, don't screw up my drilling platform. Oh, it blew up. Oh, Jesus, what's that going to... What, 15 people died? Oh, that's no big deal. But how are we going to replace the drilling platform? You filthy, unconscionable bastards. We'll be back after the break. If you want to call in, 877-996-2556. Stay with us. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. a couple of quick emails here about the use of the Navy subs, Alvin, as opposed to the manned. Are they manned? As opposed to these smaller subs that the oil company is using. Had an emailer last hour who said, you know, using the BP subs is kind of ridiculous when we have the Navy subs. Prairie 2 writes, the oil company robots are built for and match up to these underwater wells, and the operators know what they're doing. If the U.S. Navy went anywhere near the well, guess who would be blamed in the corporate media for the ongoing crisis? The turtles started washing up before the oil, and reports are they were killed by the emergency early shrimping season. Supposedly, the shrimp boats closed the turtle releases on their nets to maximize the shrimp harvest. You know, if that's the case, when they pull in those shrimp nets and there's a dead turtle, they just toss it. And Nick writes in, Mike, for what it's worth, the stated explanation why the unmanned submersible is enough is that it only turns on a switch. It isn't supposed to force the compression externally. Nick must be an engineer, because here it gets a little thick. The clamping mechanism is supposed to be done through stored internal hydraulic pressure that is released by the external signal. But obviously that didn't work. I wonder if the ocean pressure, 2,500 pounds per square inch, didn't destroy or overwhelm the mechanism. The test would be to put down another blowout protector into that depth and try to trigger it. Hell, they could do that in a static pressure test on dry land. Nick. Okay, I got about 20% of what you said, Nick, but thank you. I appreciate you writing, emailing. Shepard is in Ocala listening on XM. Shepard, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. You said about capitalism, it kind of shook me down a little bit.
The truth will do that to you.
Well, no, actually, capitalism to me is the greatest experience that I have ever had. I came from a family of liberals. You know, my father used to...
Well, tell me, I'm really not interested in your family history. Tell me how capitalism has been the greatest experience that ever happened to you. How did that work out?
Well, again, let me back up a little. I would always hear my mother say, you know, they were pro-union and they worshipped at
the
altar.
Well, wait a second. Seriously, I don't have time to listen to your family history. How did capitalism, you called in about capitalism. How has it been so good for you?
Because I've been able to buy 5 new cars. I'm 49 years old. I have a home. I have insurance. Right now, I'm a limousine driver. And these so-called evil rich people.
No, wait a second. You're not going to yell me, Shepard. Are you out of your mind? In the first place, I don't think what you have done is capitalism. I think what you have done is what Thomas Jefferson talked about and I advocate, and that is small businesses. Capitalism is like BP. I don't think you and your 9 limousine, Shepherd, are ever going to get to the point where you're going to cause a huge ecological disaster that's going to imperil the planet. So you're not talking about capitalism, Shepherd. You're talking about entrepreneurship. You're talking about a small business owner. That's you. And what you've done by saving your money, maybe you borrowed a little bit, maybe you did go to the capitalist to borrow a little bit of money, but I wouldn't say that you're a capitalist at all. I think you're blowing the wrong horn. The system that made you successful is a system where I'm sure you took little incremental steps and you took your time and you built up your small business. There's a difference between that and capitalism. You got to understand, Shepard, apparently when you were in high school or if you went to university or college, whatever, you did not cover what capitalism really is. So here's what I suggest. I'm sure you have a very interesting family of liberals, as you put it. Go back and study capitalism, or not back, just go somewhere. Go online. Go to, God forbid, you should walk into a library, but that might work too, and study what capitalism is, because I don't think you really have a handle on it. All right, Shepard? All right. Take care, buddy. Aye. Tom is in Arizona. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Mike. I got to say that shepherd is a poo-poo head. But anyway, besides that.
A poo-poo head?
Well, I don't want to get too graphic.
Yeah, okay.
I want to talk about this upcoming election here, the midterms. I'm in Arizona.
Right.
I'm an election poll worker. I'm a very active Democrat, and it's been, like, really superfluous to push this. Our leaders here, our local leaders, want us to call numbers and call people and, you know, get insulted. It's like one of those jobs where you ever seen that guy? He's sitting there in the carnival, and they're throwing, like, mud pies at him until he dunks in the thing.
Right.
That's what my job is, you know.
Well, why? What makes your job like that?
Well, because as soon as I say I'm calling from the Democratic Party, they start cussing me out.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And so it's almost superfluous, you know? I mean, I think it's the wrong way to go. I think we need to get media. I mean, I want to get you on there. You need to talk to Dave Hayes at KTOX. Okay, all right, but anyway.
Well, I don't know who that is. I'm not familiar with. I'll tell you what, if you send me the call letters of station and somebody to contact, I'll have my business partner contact them.
Oh, wow. Okay, I will. I mean, you know, people drag their feet. I'm going to do this. Okay, but anyway, I want to hear your take, even after I hang up, if you would talk about it. I would love to hear what your prediction is for the midterms in regards to, I mean, do you think that the Hispanics are going to be intimidated by this Arizona law to come out and vote or not?
Well, no. I think people of Hispanic descent are going to vote if they have the right to vote. If they're citizens, I think they're going to do what they've always done. They're going to go vote.
I hear you, but I'm just telling you, I live here, and it's like they are staying inside, dude. I'm telling you, in my town, I mean, the guys that used to have the big old parties and stuff like that with mm-hmm. the Hispanic. And the barbecues and stuff on the weekends, they're very quiet.
Well, I don't think Latinos are going to be intimidated by a bunch of white people running around screaming about go back home. If you have a right to vote, that means you're a citizen. That's the only way you can vote. And I don't think citizens of this country, regardless of their background, are going to be intimidated about voting.
Right. I hope you're right. But I just don't see it.
I don't know. I could be very, very wrong. As far as what's going to happen in the midterms, I think it's possibly going to be a reverse of what usually happens during midterm elections. What usually happens during midterm elections is whatever party has the White House will lose a certain number of seats in Congress. Not because that person is doing a bad job, but because I think Americans are inherently stupid where it concerns the political process. They don't know. They're easily motivated to throw the bums out. Now, granted, some bums need to be thrown out, but in the midterms this year, all the bums that need to be thrown out are Republican. They're Republican. Now, whether or not normally cretinous Republican voters will have the intelligence, the sense, the wisdom, what am I saying, to vote those thugs out, remains to be seen. I think the answer is clear. No, they won't. But I think given the mess that we are facing, and all of this stuff is hangover from 8 years of Bush-Cheney. People that want to lay this on Obama are out of their goddamn minds. This is hangover from Bush-Cheney. And I don't know. I don't like to make political predictions unless it's obvious, but I don't think the Republicans are going to gain anything in the midterms. Thanks, Tom. Got a boogie. We'll be right back.
Six.
is your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Just a couple more items here in this kind of synopsis research that Tony in Maine put together today by checking non-mainstream sources. BP and the U.S. Coast Guard are dumping large amounts of dispersants, both on the surface and underwater, in a desperate attempt to control the ongoing spill. Dispersants are surfactants, not unlike what you use on your dishes, that break oil down into small droplets that sink into the water. How much are they dumping? Lots. According to ProPublica, quote, BP has already bought up more than a third of the world's supply, end quote, of dispersants. On Thursday alone, ProPublica reports, emergency workers dropped 100,000 gallons of the stuff into the Gulf. And what precisely are they dumping? That's where the mystery comes in. ProPublica reports, quote, the exact makeup of the dispersants is kept secret under competitive trade laws, end quote. God, I hate that. That's capitalism for you. Now, I heard, regarding that, I heard on a news report today that BP has stopped using these surfactants because all of a sudden they're starting to worry about what they've done, what they're pouring into the sea. So that's stopped. Sixth, the New York Times carried a piece the other day headlined, Gulf oil spill is bad, but how bad? That quoted an official of the Gulf of Mexico Foundation. A marine biologist named Quentin Dokin said the sky is not falling. And the executive director of the Gulf of Mexico Foundation, a conservation group in Corpus Christi, Texas, said, quote, we certainly stepped in a hole. And we're going to have to work ourselves out of it, but it isn't the end of the Gulf of Mexico, end quote. At least half of the 19-member board of directors on that the Gulf of Mexico Foundation, half of them have direct ties to the offshore drilling industry. One of them is currently an executive at Transocean, the company that owns the Deepwater Horizon rig that exploded last month, causing these millions of gallons of oil to spill into the Gulf. Seven other board members are currently employed at oil companies or at companies that provide products and services primarily to the offshore oil and gas industry. Those companies include Shell, ConocoPhillips, LLOG Exploration Company, Devon Energy, and Anadarko Petroleum Company and Oceaneering International. Son of a bitches. You know, that's the thing. These AstroTurf organizations, you know, something called the Gulf of Mexico Foundation. What does that make you think of? The Gulf of Mexico Foundation. First of all, with the word foundation in there, it makes you think of something that maybe has a endowment fund willed to it by dying liberals or dead liberals or dead environmentalists who say, you know, I'm going to leave $100 million to the Gulf of Mexico Foundation because, well, gosh, they do such good work. Gulf of Mexico implies that these rat bastards are really concerned about the Gulf of Mexico. Well, they are, but only insofar as they can crack open the bottom of the ocean and extract oil. There should be. See, when I become king of the world for a day, I will take people like this and toss them into the Gulf of Mexico, right out there around where the spill, not the spill, where the gusher is pumping millions of gallons into the ocean and destroying the Gulf of Mexico. That's what I would do to these bastards. How dare they call themselves the Gulf of Mexico Foundation? And half of them, I wonder what the other half. The other half probably have direct ties to the weapons industry, but half of them have direct ties to the oil and gas industry, the offshore drilling industry. It's just infuriating. So these are the people saying, "Oh well, the sky's not falling. we've certainly stepped in a hole." And we're going to have to work ourselves out of it, but it isn't the end of the Gulf of Mexico. I'll tell you what, let's play a game. Whoever said that, whichever one of you pig bastards said that, let's play a game. Let me sit you down and tie you to a swivel chair. And then what I'll do is take a 9mm Glock pistol and I will hold it up against your left temple. And if we have stepped in a hole that we can't get out of, I'll pull the trigger. If we've stepped in a hole that we can get out of, as you say, then I'll put the weapon away. You want to play? You want to play that game? Huh? What do you care? How many people have already died because of this? How many people are going to die? You rat bastard. Gulf of Mexico Foundation, my nether parts. And then, of course, there is the loop current. We'll do that when we come back and also take some phone calls. Stick around. We have more to go. I'm Mike Malloy. That's not here. Oh, I see. That was irony. There is some breaking news here that you may want to know about. Apparently, the Kennedy Bridge, the Robert F. Kennedy Bridge that links the Bronx and Manhattan has been shut down. There was a vehicle of some sort, U-Haul truck heading across from the Bronx into Manhattan. The truck stopped, or was stopped, on the bridge. Witnesses say that the driver took off and ran. The police came immediately, and the cops backed off when there was a powerful odor of gasoline. So right now, I guess the hazmat or the bomb squad people are on their way. It's the RFK Bridge between the Bronx, I think, and Manhattan. It's near the Manhattan toll booth. And the van had Arizona plates, and it was it's a U-Haul, or not a van, but, well, yeah, some kind of a van. So that's a breaking news story. If you want more on this, I guess turn on CNN, and they should have some more information. All right, back to your phone calls. Brian is in Beverly Hills listening online. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I wanted to say I wanted to talk about the oil disaster.
Yeah.
I think cartographers need to get busy renaming the Gulf of Mexico the new Dead Sea.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh.
I know it's morbid, but anyway, I also feel like that they're going to try to, I don't think they're looking for the best solution for this, to plug this oil up. I think they're looking for the solution that's going to allow them to salvage as much of the oil as they can.
They being BP. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, of course.
And then,
because remember, this is capitalism. Capitalism doesn't care about people, the environment, social fabric of a society, jobs, nothing. It cares about profit, period.
Right. It's kind of like, they're kind of like drug fiends. You know,
you're right.
Somebody's house, kill their grandmother, and find those drugs, and that's all that that's the focus. That's
yeah.
The beeline of the focus.
That's it.
And I also feel that, you know, that this thing that Michael Brown was saying.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're trying to attack Barack for the wrong thing. They should be attacking him for saying he's for offshore oil drilling, and then look what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, because in my eyes, Brock's kind of appearing like a little bit of, you know, I don't know what word you use, but, you know, like a kind of foolish, you know, like I was for this and now look what's going on. How am I going to defend this? And I think, you know, back to Michael Brown, I think it's sort of preemptive that they know exactly. I mean, if Brock does the right thing, they know that, you know, he's going to denounce this and probably possibly not allow it to continue on in the future.
You know, I don't, I'm not sure I understand how the allocation of these sites and who they go to, if they're leases that are bid on and auctions, who holds the auction, who authorizes, is it the president, is it the Congress, is there some government agency? I really don't know. I don't know if Obama has the power to order it or not order it, whether it's nuclear power plants down here in Georgia or offshore drilling in the Gulf. I know he's the one that makes the announcement.
Right.
But I honestly don't know. I'm sure somebody will send that information to us here, or I'll do the research myself. But I'm not sure how that works. I heard this crazy-ass comment today someplace. Maybe I read it. Maybe it was Limbaugh. Maybe because Limbaugh is really losing it. I mean, he's just going right into the toilet. But the idea that what Obama did was make the statement about, yeah, we're gonna go ahead and do some offshore drilling, and then he sent a team of saboteurs out there to blow this thing up.
Right, exactly.
So, oh my God! I mean, what in the hell is going on? So that he could then say, okay, we're going to end all drilling in the Gulf. I mean, this is madness.
That's what I was saying. That Michael Brown was, I think he was saying that because if in the end, you know, Barack or whoever comes out and says, you know, we simply cannot do this anymore, which is what he should say. If I don't know if we can do anything about it, but he should say we absolutely, positively cannot go in this direction anymore in the future. No,
I don't know.
If he says that, then Michael Brown is right. You know what I mean? He's going to say, oh, you know, now he actually did, you know, side with the environmentalists.
Oh God, let's not let that happen. You know, the thing about Michael Brown, Brian, is I'm trying to figure out why anybody, and I understand he was on CNN tonight on Anderson Cooper's program, why would anyone want to talk about Michael Brown about anything except maybe raising horses or how to hot walk a thoroughbred after you've taken him out and run the hell out of her? But why would anyone want to talk about Michael Brown? What the hell is CNN doing giving a corrupt loser bastard like Michael Brown airtime at all? Hey, I got to leave it there, Brian. Thanks. You know, why not bring Karl Rove? Well, they have, haven't they? Why not bring Dick Cheney on CNN and ask him about U.S. foreign policy where it concerns how to make peace in the Middle East? You know, what the hell is Michael Brown out there for anything? Son of a bitch belongs in jail someplace. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Okay.
I have a slight theory about what you were just talking about with Limbaugh and the Republicans bringing up that the theory that Obama sent someone down to blow up the rig.
Yeah, yeah.
Try to make Bush look better. Like, remember, they're trying to use facts that we knew about Bush that made him look bad and come up with stories about Obama to make him look bad. Like, Bush didn't complete his tour of duty when he was in the military.
Right.
Well, he didn't deserve to be president for that. Well, Obama wasn't born in the country. He doesn't deserve to be president. Well, Bush was behind and didn't respond well to 9/11. Well, Obama blew up the rig.
Right.
He doesn't deserve it.
And that's where this crazy, insane, false equivalency
right.
comes up by corporate media. They do this all the time. I mean, this is insane. It's just more insanity.
And I think it's not going to work because a lot of the people that were on the left that were doing this weren't getting the airtime to put this up. Because the Republicans are putting out, it's being put all over the place, and I think the independents are going to look and say, these people are nuts.
I hope that's
what's going to happen, too.
I hope. That's of course, the people who vote for these morons are so brain dead. I mean, you could set a bomb off in their house, and they, you know, they would not hear it unless Glenn Beck showed up and said, listen, Obama just blew your house up. I mean, these people are desperately stupid, so they may go ahead and vote for these candidates like this J.D. Hayworth out in Arizona. I don't think I've ever seen anybody who, first of all, he looks like he eats human flesh. He looks like a cannibal. Have you seen this guy, the one running against McCain?
Yeah.
I mean, he does. Honest to God, he looks like a cannibal. He looks like he sits down and eats chunks of human flesh. And he's a moron to begin with.
Right.
But because he's saying things that the brain dead voters in Arizona want to hear, they'll probably elect him. It's astonishing. Just astonishing. I think it'll be a good kick in the ass, though, for John McCain. You know, McCain is such a flip flopper, such a waffler. And he's also a war criminal. He's also a coward. God only knows how many people he bombed, in North Vietnam and took their lives. So, you know, McCain probably needs to be defeated and sent someplace where he can, deal with his conscience in the darkness of night. But this animal looking J.D. Hayworth, who honestly looks like a predatory, some kind of a predator that, you know, jumps out of the bushes invisible and scares the hell out of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, I got to leave it there. Thanks. Thanks, Paul. Yeah, it's that time of night where the coughing commences. Oh, good. Joel is in Berkeley, California, listening to Green 960. Hey, Joel.
Yeah, hey, Mike. How are you doing? I actually sent you an email about this. I want to go back to the Arizona law and voter intimidation.
Okay.
Not really intimidation exactly, but Greg Palast has actually been on both Hartman and Stephanie Miller talking about this, and he's got a piece up on Truth Out on his own website.
Mm-hmm.
The basic idea is that the Republicans in Arizona know that they're electoral toast unless they can somehow stop the demographic juggernaut. They've got all these you know, Latino voters, citizens, legal citizens, who are registering to vote. They're voting and registering overwhelmingly Democratic.
Mm-hmm.
Brewer, Jan Brewer, now governor, when she was Secretary of State in 2004, was responsible for purging about 100,000 Hispanic voters. And the basic idea of this law is, should it go into effect, you can imagine, November 2nd, there will be Republican operatives, you know, fanning out into Democratic precincts all across Arizona.
Right.
Show me your papers. And if you don't have the papers, they'll threaten voters, legal voters, standing in line with arrest. And mm-hmm. they may even arrest a whole bunch of them. So that's basically the scenario. And Greg Palast, you know, details it further in his piece. And
right. And I'm sure Brad Friedman at bradblog.com has a lot of this stuff up, too. The voter suppression idea is something that Friedman and Palast have worked on for a long time.
That's right.
That's one of those scenarios where... I hate to say this, but I would like to be standing in that line and with a baseball bat and just let some pasty-faced SOB come up and ask me for my papers. Oh, my God.
Oh, they won't ask you, Mike.
Well, I could make myself look, quote-quote, Latino.
Fair enough.
Don't forget I'm Italian anyway. Hey, thanks, Joel. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be right back.
Night network TV shows with celebrities smiling in their famous clothes, sitting pretty, spitting witticisms on success to a cackling clown behind a cardboard desk in the late night talk wars to pacify the truly bored. Corporations paying to the nose to bring us late night talk shows.
Ten before the hour, Michael, who lives in the Bronx, sent me this about the RFK Triborough Bridge situation. And Michael writes, there's a U-Haul mini truck on the bridge by the Manhattan Span, Manhattan bound, and the smell described, according to local reports here in New York City, was that the truck was leaking fluid, most likely gasoline, and the truck had broken down. The guy in question was said to be running for help. There's a gas and service station at the end of the bridge exit ramp onto 2nd Avenue and East 125th Street. But given what has occurred over the weekend in Times Square, authorities were not about to take any chances and minimize the possible severity of the matter, which explains the police presence on the bridge itself. All traffic to and from Manhattan, whether from Bronx or from Queens, temporarily closed, yada, yada, yada. All right, thanks, Michael. And Tony in Maine, who had sent this in, I'm going to get back the phones here in just a second. The 7th, he did a lot of research today and came up with this stuff. He tried to avoid television. Number 7 on his list, government officials and scientists from Mississippi to Florida are holding their collective breath to see whether a strong but unpredictable current in the Gulf of Mexico, known as the Loop Current, will continue to expand north toward Louisiana. 2 days ago, the latest time for which satellite data are available, the current sat 125 miles south of the spill, its rotating tendrils licking at the slick's eastern edge. Oceanographer at the University of South Florida has long warned of the flow's potential impact on his state, said it's a very important concern. The loop current is actually moving toward the oil. For the current to begin conveying the oil at any volume, it would still have to surge much further north, which some computer models like Weisberg's are predicting. And as of today, May 5th, the massive slick has spread to 3,500 square miles, about the size of Puerto Rico. Good God. Till is in Austin, Texas, listening online. Hey, Till.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi. I made a short list of some what I think, you know, government and businesses either have or potentially have exposed to reckless endangerment. The first one, completely unnecessary. First is mad cow disease, meaning, you know, animal products to cattle that are herbivores. The next one is not necessarily in order, chronological order, the Glass-Steagall, repealing Glass-Steagall. They've devastated the economy for, you know, there was no
right
to do that. The next one was the Cassinage spacecraft that had a plutonium battery and it was slingshot around the Earth. If that had burned up in the atmosphere, you know, it would have made a really mess.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, this acoustic shutoff valve, you know, $500,000 valve on something that pulls in billions of dollars a year.
Right.
They're just exposing us to these crazy, reckless things. But there's no need for them to do it. I mean, it's like driving your car with your eyes closed. Why?
Well, it goes back to capitalism. Capitalism never factors in human life as being something that one shouldn't destroy. It just doesn't. So if there are... if there are situations where people die or the potential is there for people to die, a capitalist enterprise doesn't factor that in. If they do factor it in, they factor it in only on a cost analysis basis. How much will it cost them per human life? This was the argument that I think, who was it? Was it Ralph Nader made way back in the early 60s with the book Unsafe at Any Speed about the Chevy Corvair? That had the exploding gas tanks. People were dying all over the country, getting hit from the rear, and the gas tank would explode. And all it would have taken to prevent that would have been a relatively inexpensive part or barricade or whatever it was. And you know, we're talking about something from damn near 50 years ago now.
I think the Corvair, I think, had that the half shaft. It had a U joint on. The
right, the whatever outside. It was penetrating the gas tank and causing an explosion. And that's my point exactly. You know, I get a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls from people that think I'm crazy about capitalism. I care less what they think. It doesn't matter to me what people think about capitalism being a good system. It is a poisonous, destructive, murderous system. And as far as those examples you just gave, you know, to expect corporate America or capitalism to act responsibly is to believe in fairies. I mean, why would it happen? There is no cost benefit in acting, you know, for these corporations to act responsibly. There is none. And it doesn't make any difference. Look, they're recalling. Johnson & Johnson has a distributor now that is recalling all sorts of children's medicine. Why? Because the bacterial count may be too high. Get that. Get the modifier there, too. There may be little pieces of metal. Maybe the active ingredient is not in the proportion that it says on the label. All kinds of stuff. Now, we are to believe that Johnson & Johnson's stable of God knows how many scientists, how many quality control people didn't notice that. Of course they noticed it, but they figure, well, it's not going to kill anybody. At least we hope it won't. And even if it does wipe out a couple of kids, what would be better? Recalling the drug, which will cost us millions, or paying a couple of lawsuits, which will take forever to settle. We can stall it, get it down to maybe 50 grand per kid. These are rancid, rotten sons of bitches, Till. Every single capitalist in America could not care less about human life. That's not what capitalism is about. It's never been. It never will be. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.